Hello, and welcome to the Live Book Business webinar, The Quest for Versatile Content. This webinar today is sponsored by SPI Global, one of the world's largest and most diversified knowledge process outsourcing and customer relationship management service providers. I'm your moderator, Jim Sturdivant, contributing editor at Book Business Magazine. Noel Skazinski, who is scheduled to moderate today, is feeling under the weather, and we all wish her a speedy recovery. Before we get started, I'd like to point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help button at the bottom of the console, or let us know via the Ask a Question box. Second, make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in any interactive portions of the presentation. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you're enjoying this webinar and would like to spread the word to your peers, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the Survey button. The survey will be distributed at the end of today's webinar. Today's speakers will be answering select questions live at the end of the presentation. Use the Ask a Question feature on the console to submit your questions for consideration in advance at any time. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same audience link you used to watch the presentation today. Finally, we encourage you to tweet about this webinar. Please use hashtag PBWebinar when doing so. I'd first like to introduce our speakers and give a welcome to Mike Rosiak, Lead Content Architect at Wahlers Kluwer Health, and Tom Pullman, Director EPD at Elsevier US. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Thanks, Tim. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And what we're doing first is we have an audience poll. And before we get started, we were hoping to get a sense of where the audience is with their e-books programs. So we have some questions on the screen. Basically, where are you with your eBooks program? And please select only one of the answers that you hopefully see there, which the choices are doing nothing yet, in the planning stages, dabbling, experimenting, rushing to just have eBooks out there but not focusing on quality or output formats yet, and designing content for specific platforms and refining things to improve quality. So we definitely appreciate the audience feedback, and it will give our speakers a better sense of the type of audience we're addressing. I don't know if you two have any sense of where you think most publishers tend to be, or whether it really does kind of depend on the segment of publishing they're in. But I guess we'll get a sense here based on the results.
Jim, I think, Jim, this is just a new market. I mean, I think that's part of the whole challenge around this is how do we, and why we're having this conversation today is to think about how we're doing these things. And the more experience everybody gets, the more the market will sort of coalesce into a single direction.
Okay, sure. And we have some results back. Looks like designing content for specific platforms and refining things to improve quality, 30.9% of our audience is responding, is selecting that one. Dabbling, experimenting is coming in at number two at this point, with now at 28%. Doing nothing, 14.8%. Always a a noble thing to admit that taking a wait and see attitude. 14% are in the planning stages, and 12.5%. are rushing to get the ebooks out there, but not yet focused on quality or output. So, with that in mind, we can move on to trying to get a sense of where the broader market is. We have some statistics here, looking at the tablet market and where that seems to be going. Total market in 2010, we saw over 17.5 million tablets in use. It's projected by 2015 that number will be, almost 300 million, which is just really amazing. In terms of market share, right now, as everybody knows, Apple has the lion's share, 83.9%. In four years, that's projected to be just under half, with Android, picking up a lot of the share, and BlackBerry's operating system also, becoming more important. And then looking at the smartphone market, another story of explosive growth. In 2010, we had almost 300 million smartphones in use. By 2015, we're looking at over a billion. This is according to Gartner figures from them. Key trends: sales to hit 468 million units in 2011, 57.7 increase from 2010. Android, most popular system. Apple's operating system to remain the second biggest worldwide platform through 2014, but Gartner expects the Windows Phone to overtake Apple in the number two spot due to their alliance with Nokia. So interesting trends here. And I think with that, we can probably move into getting Mike and Tom, getting your perspective on this thing. Let's start with getting a brief explanation of your company so the audience knows basically where you're coming from. Mike, you want to go first?
Sure. So I am lead content architect at Walter School of Health. We are a healthcare publisher. Specifically, we target the professional and education market with textbooks and reference books for doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professions. We publish in the neighborhood of maybe 1,000 new titles a year. I could be exaggerating that a little bit. We have some of the leading books, reference books as far as cancer treatment, drug guides, and we are probably going back to that poll and in somewhere in the middle between rushing to get out there and actually starting to plan for ebook specific content.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tom?
I work for Elsevier. We are one of the, and I'm going to repeat some of what Mike just said. I mean, we happen to compete in the marketplace. We are a very large STM publisher worldwide, doing a lot of work in journals and in books. I work on the U.S. side for the Department of Operate, for Group of Operations, and we represent here primarily the customers I work with are the United States Health Science publishers in Elsevier. We put out somewhere in the range of about 1,000 books, and one of my teams also works then on the journal side as well.
Okay. Well, can you first, and I guess we'll start with Mike again. Can you each talk about your processes for ebook creation? We're kind of starting with a biggie here in terms of questions, and what led to the current processes, and how did you get where you are now? I guess would be the first thing to ask about.
Well, I would say that we typically one of our books starts life as a print publication. There are some that begin as XML and are more multi-channel oriented, but the biggest group are really the print-focused textbooks. And mm-hmm. I would say up until a few years ago, there wasn't a huge drive to make anything ebook related. The Sony Reader came along, the Kindle came along, and I don't think there was anything that compelling to move to that. However, what we found is that, particularly with textbooks, there was a big need for students who didn't want to be carrying around giant books to classes and wanted to have something electronic. And it also gives the professors a way to select individual chapters and recombine content in ways that they couldn't before. So we're doing a lot of that, and then the next step is the iPad and making some content that's very tailored to that platform.
So which platforms are you currently on?
I'd say there's about 20 that we're pushing to right now.
Okay.
Some are very education specific, some are general like Amazon and Apple.
Okay. Okay. And what about you, Tom?
We started putting out books electronically out to websites, I would say, a number of years ago. And from that evolution, you know, we had to provide the books in electronic content. I think we're putting out right now, I'd say the majority of our books are available in some kind of electronic format, which has been, you know, sort of making it easy for us to get into electronic book world. But, you know, the challenges have been no different, I think, on our side. Once we're there, how do we do it? You know, last year there was a big push. When the iPad came out, there was a big push now to say these were platforms that were good for our books. Kindle is a nice platform, but, you know, when you're looking at large textbooks that have lots of images in color, in the medicine side, it's pretty important to have color and large images. So mm-hmm. we're now focusing a lot more on how to get that type of content out there. We are also out, I think, on more than 10 different platforms that are out there, a variety of both electronic libraries and groups like Amazon and Barnes & Noble that were out there distributing through their channels. It's a tough market. It's been really interesting to have that debate with our publishers between talking about a platform versus talking about a device.
Okay.
That's a challenge that we get into a lot.
Well, that sounds like a good lead-in to our second poll question. We have two poll questions today. This is our second one, again, just to get a good sense of what our audience is doing and where they're at. The second poll question, what is your biggest challenge when it comes to your ebook program? You can select more than one of these. Could be understanding formats, conversion processes, and options, streamlining workflow to handle multiple outputs, deciding which platform/hardware on which to output content, be it the iPad, Kindle, iPhone, Droid, BlackBerry, etc. Determining business strategy, which books to output in digital formats, which formulas, etc. Pricing, or something else. So we'd love to get some feedback on that from our audience. So we'll see if we have anything so far. Oh, they're quick on the draw. We've already got understanding formats, conversion processes, and options. 57.8% of our audience is saying that's the biggest challenge. 48% say streamlining workflows, followed by deciding on the platform and hardware, determining business strategies. And I'm refreshing this, and the percentages seem about the same relative to each other. So then rounding it off, determining business strategy, 35.4%. Pricing, still only at under 30% as far as the primary challenge. I find that interesting. So so given that, you know, I don't know how that relates directly to your guys' experience, but perhaps we can jump back into the Q&A by talking about the different conversion services and options that exist for various types of publishers, small to large, the various price points. And any tips that you two might have for selecting the right platform or process for a publisher's individual needs?
That's a debate that we have here, I think, more and more often. You know, it is a debate to say, do we just automatically put every book up online, or do we do some kind of collections, or how do we group them? And it's a challenge we fight sort of every day. You know, was the book designed to be electronic? In some cases, we have books that were not designed to be electronic, and their conversion to an electronic format is troubling and causes us some problems. You know, it's a one-off. I mean, you hate to say it when you put 1,000 books out a year, that we have to look at every one of these books individually and say, is this a good candidate to put out there? And, you know, how much effort should be made to make it look perfect online.
So, yeah. So you would say that as much as understanding the conversion process, really a lot of your challenge does have to do with strategy, deciding which books that you're going to put out in these platforms.
It is, and it's. I think the rush is the immediate answer is a knee-jerk answer, which is every one of our books has to be out there.
Okay.
I think we made an attempt at that early last year, and we found that some books just don't look good, and that caused more problems than it answered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now it is back there to see what are the best books. You know, groups like Amazon will come to us and say we want every book. You know, that's their goal. And the reality is not every book is appropriate to put up there.
Okay. Okay. Tom?
That was Tom.
Oh, that was Tom. I'm sorry. Mike. Jump in. You can jump in, Mike.
I would echo Tom's comments about the quality issues and, you know, deciding if you can really put something, especially something that's very design heavy or has a lot of tables into every format and have it really look good. Especially when you're talking about medical content, you don't want people, you know, cutting the wrong way or getting the wrong dosage on a medication.
Mm-hmm.
The way we kind of approach things is the first step was to have our printer PDFs back from our compositors sent out to a conversion shop who first created a web-ready PDF, and some of the platforms we deliver to take the web-ready PDF, and they have what they call a page fidelity mode. So you're essentially looking at a view of the printed page exactly as it would look in print. And then from there, converting into things like EPUB and other flowable formats so that they can be put on the Kindle or an iPad or you know, other platforms that support that type of rendering. So that becomes more of the challenge where, you know, if something doesn't flow right, you know, how do we fix it? So we also have a outsourced QA group that goes in through every title and looks for those kind of glitches just to make sure that we're not putting something out in the market that's not quality.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as far as tips you might have specifically from your experience as far as selecting the right platform or process, can either one of you say something about that?
I think, in at least in the world of Elsevier, you know, our goal is to start with content that's rather agnostic. You know, our goal is to have as many books as we can in XML. Sort of different than what Mike put through is, you know, our goal is to have XML to start with. We think it can go out to a website, but we also know we can go from XML into an EPUB file. So that process is the direction that we've sort of aimed things at, and we think there's some flexibility around that. We do have challenges, and I think Mike just said it, you know, the print fidelity need is high on some books. So in XML, that's caused us a bit of a challenge to go back and look at some of the books and see whether a different process would be better for them, starting in Mike's suggestion of PDFs.
Okay.
I'd say we're also working towards trying to have XML first on many of our publications where it makes sense. You know, some, again, are just so design-heavy that to reuse the XML would take more effort than to just recreate the content in a different format. But one of the biggest challenges we run into is collecting the metadata that's needed for each of these platforms, organizing that, and getting all the files together. So what we've done is we're working with Ingram Digital with a platform called CoreSource, and everything flows into that and then gets redistributed from there. So we have a central hub of content and metadata, and we know who has what publications, you know, pretty much just to control everything, because it gets out of hand pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, speaking of the evolution we've seen in e-books, you know, going from basic print replication, you know, working with PDF files, and moving to reflowable text options, enhanced, enriched electronic content. I'm interested in specific developments that you two have seen that have helped to improve the conversion of more technical, complex content. You know, that's really what you guys spend so much of your time, I think, working with, and what a lot of our audience is you know, finding a big part of the challenge. You know, things like STM or academic texts and enhanced ebooks, things like that. And we do have some slides here, which you guys probably could explain better than I could, having to do with formats and hardware and things like that. So maybe you guys can talk a little bit about, you know, this sort of process going from the more basic print replication into the more into the reflowable text options.
Well, this is a challenge we look at every day. You know,
okay.
How do we get a piece of content out, and what platform do we want to review it on? You know, I think there is the quick reaction is to say, well, I want it to look good on a Kindle and on a Nook and on an iPad and on Kindle for PC, and I want it to look good on the Sony Reader. Frankly, I don't think we can make a single file that will do all those things.
Okay, we're not
there
yet.
Then the question is, do we really want to try to manage delivering a different type of file to every one of those platforms? And our answer is no. I can't manage it. With 1,000 books, I can't imagine having 5,000 to 10,000 files in a given year to make everyone look best on every piece. It's been a real challenge to get to reflowable. And you can look at this chart that you have on the screen, and these are all the different types of file deliverables that each of these locations take and the different devices that they sit on. And they do render dramatically different. You know, our biggest challenge in reflowable text is to get our customers, internal and external, to understand that this is electronic. It's not print. And it's not going to maintain the full print fidelity unless I go directly to a PDF. And the challenge of deciding what is acceptable, what isn't, is really, unfortunately, down to a book-by-book basis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's almost parallel to where we were about 15 years ago with the web, where you had to you know, keep in mind that you're designing for Internet Explorer and for Mozilla and for, well, whatever it was at the time. You know, now there's Safari and there's Chrome. And so each of those renders HTML, but does it perhaps a little bit differently, and the Mac is different fonts than the PC and so forth. So I think we'll eventually get to that level where we're designing for each platform, and maybe within the same file we can have that kind of conditional rendering ability. But it's still a big challenge right now to make everything look good everywhere.
Okay. Well, this is the next question I have here, which seems really key. Where is the industry on the path toward what Noel refers to as the Holy Grail, a workflow that works once and produces content that can be outputted in any format? You know, where are we on that road? And then the second part of that question would be, what still stands in the way of that actually being achieved? If that's even possible to answer right now. I mean, is EPUB 3, I mean, is that critical to it, or, you know, what's your thinking on that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, EPUB came out, it was a solution for a novel, you know, how to read a romance novel on an electronic version.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Kindle jumped right into that market, and it was very good. You know, we've now seen this evolution, and we talk about it with our customers. When we get out to, you know, this is a different, we're using this device differently than, and this file type differently than we had expected when it was originally designed. So now when we get into EPUB 3, it'll have more functionality and more things it can do. We're still going to be constrained somewhat by the development on the devices or the platforms that are out there. You know, there are some things that we can do on an Apple platform that we just can't do on an Amazon platform. And do I think that those two things are going to come closer together? I don't see it in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there a holy grail? I think an EPUB is as close to a holy grail as we're going to get. But even when you start looking at what individual platforms or devices or third-party providers will take, it varies a bit. You know, and to me, when we started in this process to look at what an EPUB was, what an acceptable EPUB was, then to look at what Amazon thought was an acceptable EPUB was, and then what did Sony think was an acceptable EPUB, and they were subsets of each other. And they fortunately overlapped enough that you could send one file to all those, but you had to meet each of their demands sort of differently. You know, there's a 2 gigabyte file limit at Apple. There's a 640 megabyte file limit at Amazon.
Okay. Okay.
You know, that,
it's also pretty much a moving target too. We look at this, you know, idea of the Holy Grail and where to get to, and then we get close to it, and all of a sudden something new comes out. So, you know, what if a new device comes out that can render smells? So now we got to go back and figure out how to put smell information into our content, which, you know, for medical text might be an interesting concept. So, you know, we'll get close to it, but it's a path that we may never, ever get down to the end, and we just have to do the best we can to keep moving.
Well, do you guys have any opinion about what maybe would need to happen in order for that to be achieved? Maybe something that's not happening now that could help facilitate that sort of coming together? Or I don't know.
I think it's market-driven.
Yeah.
And I right now the market isn't solidly understood. And isn't really solid. I mean, you showed those screens. When you have a 50% increase in the number of items being bought in a given year, that's a huge number. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge number of customers that we're not sure how they're going to use these devices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the concept is really good that we can give you your textbook on a small, you know, imagine a student carrying 4,000 or 5,000 pages of textbooks, and I can put them all onto a single device. That's mm-hmm. a great concept.
Yeah.
Will the students do it consistently and often enough? We're going to find out.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Well, what role do you see? As we look ahead, what do you think the role for PDF is in the future as other formats improve and emerge to support things like text reflow, complex image heavy texts, and there's more of a demand for that. You know, speaking about the market demand, where do you think PDF fits in looking ahead, given that? I don't know if Mike, if you have a thought about that.
Well, I think it's like saying where's print going to be in 10 years?
Yeah.
Everybody kept saying print was going to go away, and it didn't. There's always going to be a need for PDF and for heavily designed pages being able to be viewed with high fidelity. And if PDF evolves and does things like video and other things, then it'll be another viable format next to EPUB and whatever else is out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think, Tom?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know that there's an answer to that. I mean, there's still a reason to do PDFs. The print fidelity is still that important on a number of titles, and certainly in our world, a number of titles that way. And I just don't see a solution yet. There are some interesting things. Apple does some things, allows EPUBs to come to them that have certainly closer to print fidelity, so the ability to do full-page images as a background almost and put text on top of them are some things that you can do in EPUBs, but only one of the major players allows you to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Going back to the statistics we were showing earlier, what about the impact of the iPad and smartphone and the explosion of that market, the impact of that on publishers and on e-books and among your end users and customers? What do you see happening as a result of these sort of projections of the iPad's explosive growth and other tablets?
Well, I would say the iPad really accelerated our drive to want to get into ebook publishing,
mm-hmm.
Just because of many things. One was that it was such a groundbreaking platform, large format display, color, support for animation, sound. So moving from there into the app world, we have some titles that we do as print, and then they become ebooks, and then we also have apps for them. So, a lot of the reference type information, you can download an app and, find out information on diseases and drugs and, through a very customized interface, tailored specifically for the iPad and also for the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think, Tom, as far as the impact that we're already seeing and will see?
The impact, we were having conversations with Amazon in 2009 about putting our books up onto the Kindle. The iPad came out, and the flurry, a number of requests that I got in my group to deliver content jumped 100-fold. Just that quickly from April through June of last year, we went from, you know, it'd be nice to have to must have. For all of our titles, we had conversations around journals, we had conversations around books, you know, and then we started debating how far back do you go, how many books do we do in the future. It was that effective. Is it the answer in my mind? I don't know that it is the answer. It's an answer, but it shows that the need for a large screen, and Mike just ran down it, large screen color device with audio, with animation, was very important to support that. Now, can somebody else come out next month with something that does the same thing? Possibly.
Okay. Well, now might be a good time to look at what you guys are doing in ebooks versus apps, you know, given everything we were just talking about. And maybe you can talk a little bit about in your space, in your publishing space, the difference between these, what the strategy's been for deciding which is the best format for various products. When do you go with an ebook? When do you go with an app? So maybe, Mike, can you speak to that?
Sure. So a lot of what we publish is very linear, very sequential, textbooks, procedure manuals, and things like that. So in that sense, there's not a lot of added value to an app per se, because really you need to consume the content from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Where we really get into the app space is in the reference type content, you know, things that are you know, random and can be consumed in you know, totally different orders without upsetting the flow of information. So, you know, again, things like drugs or descriptions of diseases, you know, things that you want to be able to have more searchable, more creative ways to get to be able to have things more semantically presented than just in a linear text format.
And is that it's just more user-friendly in terms of the way these things are actually used?
Well, the whole idea is we want to have the content at the point of use. So if a doctor's in a patient's, you know, in his office with a patient, he wants to have the information right there as quickly as he can get it. So, you know, whatever we can do to make it the most useful at the right time at the point of care is how we want to present it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tom?
In addition to what Mike said, we've also looked at whether in an e-book versus apps world, whether or not we should want to maintain, again, sort of fidelity, and maybe not necessarily to print, but we want to be able to control what it looks like. You know, if you go to an ebook and you go to just, I'm going to say iBooks or even into the Kindle, you can change the size of the type, you can change the font itself, you can change background colors, all of that is good for readability for the user. From a standpoint of controlling what the book looks like, it's horrible. You know, I've shown things to designers, and the designers here, and they freak out that they can't have that much control over what they designed. When we go into the app world, our publishers really like that. In some cases, they can really make things look exactly they want them to look, and take control away from the user, but be able to present the information in a way that is best. We have a piece of content out here. It's Grey's Anatomy for the Head and Neck. It's an app out in the Apple Store. And it has itself look a lot like print content looks, but you can drill deeper and get to your piece of content much faster. So it has all of the topics are at the beginning rather than just a table of content. The contents that breaks the book down into, say, four or five chapters or four or five sections, it breaks it down into a couple of hundred subsections. You can go directly to that. You can open and blow up images within it, things that you can't do on many devices. You can blow up an image. In this particular application, you can save images so that you can use them in a PowerPoint presentation somewhere else. So an app has some functionality that you really need to think about what your customers want to do with the content. You know, as Mike said, reference work, very important. I want to look up one word. So trying to find that one word in a ebook is really complicated. So build an app so that you can get to it quickly.
Okay. Well, that's just interesting to me that you're talking about the customer having more control with the Kindle and the e-ink versions. I wouldn't have guessed that was necessarily the case.
Well, I think control is necessary to they can change things. Whether or not they're actually changing what they're doing with it is the problem. I mean, they can just change the way it looks. It doesn't change the content. It doesn't really change the way they access the content.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to an app, that's when you're sort of even more controlling how that they look at a piece of content.
Okay. And speaking of do's and don'ts, getting back to sort of, I guess, tips, things you've learned the hard way, or any advice you might have about the ebook conversion process that you can share with the audience. I guess we can start with Mike again.
Well, let's see. One of the things we found out as we got more and more into this, the number of platforms increased, the number of titles that we were sending to each platform increased, is just having a way to manage everything. And really, I think the biggest challenge is collecting all of the metadata because it's in so many different places. So one of the things we're trying to do right now is to centralize that. And so we have all the all the ISBN numbers and titles and cover images and the usage rights and the pricing and all those things in the same place. And that's sort of a function we didn't have organizationally. So, number one is a technology issue and just having a good tool for managing that. And then number two is having a role within the company that focused on that type of thing. So we designated a librarian to just handle that type of processing.
Okay. All right.
Can I just say ditto to that and move on?
Yeah, sure. That sounds fine. And really, that's one of the reasons that sounds great is that I'm seeing we have a lot of excellent questions from the audience. So I think I might want to go ahead and jump into that a little bit early. I think that would be really valuable. So the first thing I wanted to ask you guys about, we have a question. Can you explain briefly some of the details about converting publications that are graphics and photograph heavy to ebook formats? Where do you get hung up and how much formatting is necessary?
Wow. In many cases, we've tried to avoid it.
Okay.
We get hung up, at least on our side, we get hung up by the need to keep text and images together. So if we have a full-page image, but it's got a piece of text at the top, it's a header or it's a description, we get hung up to make sure that those all stay together because as soon as, for instance, a person changes the font size, that may push that image to the next page. And when it pushes the image to the next page, maybe the next page's header slides in at the bottom of that image instead. So now there becomes an association with things that we don't want associated. That's been one of our biggest challenges in big image, in image-heavy books.
Okay.
And I think that's why, in my mind, one of the reasons is to go look at an app for something like that.
Oh, interesting.
And adding on to that, I think we have the same issue there as well as just the image quality. In particular, we have books that are about wound care or about surgical procedures, and you need to have that high-res detail come through, or it's really not valuable.
Okay. Yeah. Starting out, when you were jumping into e-books, did you expect that to cannibalize your print revenue? It's another audience question. Have you found an unexpected revenue in a revitalized backlist that wasn't selling at all or wasn't selling much before you got into e-books?
I don't know the answer to your first question. I can give you a global answer, which is we do see, and not global in Elsevier, but just throughout the world, print sales are down and e-sales are up.
Mm-hmm.
You have to assume that one is going to the other.
Sure.
To answer your second part of that question about backlists, I think there's a real challenge around it. I think in some cases, yes. Is the answer to put every one of your titles back out there? That's a tough decision. I think there is some people who would like to have that book, might have bought it in print 3 years ago and want it now. Oh, look, it's electronic, and I have an iPad. Can I get it that way? Sure. It is one of those debates to have on a one-by-one basis. You know, do we think this book is going to have enough sales to cover the effort and the cost to get it made into an EPUB file? If you have the right formats, you know, if we have XML for a book, it becomes an easier decision. If I don't have the book electronically, then I really do have to have a bigger debate.
Okay. Okay.
I would say up until about a couple of years ago, we were having issues with print revenue declining and not having a really good way to recover that. However, past that point in time, we've balanced out. So the revenue line is pretty much stable. But if we look at the breakdown between print and electronic, it's heavily moving into electronic. So the electronic is taking over for print now, not necessarily cannibalizing it, but you know, we're getting better at understanding where the market is going and being able to adapt so that, you know, we're still staying above water.
I have a question about an XML-based strategy, specifically how that works with your editorial and design departments and the benefits that you've seen there. I guess this is really a workflow question. So if anything, if you feel like you've covered that, then we, you know.
I guess I don't understand the question in there.
Well, it's what benefits have you seen in switching to an XML-based strategy, and how is it? I guess how has it played out with your editorial and design departments in ebook development?
I think it's helped us in the books that we have it.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that we designed the book originally for print, so that's one of the things we're spending some time now to go back and say, all right, knowing what we know now about ebooks. And it takes us, you know, from the time we design a book to the time that we print the book, maybe 9 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
Can we design for the electronic book at the same time? And is it worth doing? And we're just beginning to explore that conversation.
Okay. Okay.
I think from our perspective, we know what the benefits of XML are in getting XML first, and the challenge for us is more in changing from a more print-focused organization to electronic-focused, because you're not getting the value back from the XML immediately. So having editors that understand that they're, you know, working with angle brackets and you know, this is why they need to do it, and making sure you're actually, you know, closing the loop and showing them what that's going to get us at the end of the day.
Okay. Question for both of you. Do you worry about piracy? And they gave it a capital P. And if so, what do you do to combat it?
Well, we a lot of the platforms have DRM built into them.
Yeah.
So, and they allow things like sharing or subscription expiration. So things like textbooks, you can lend a textbook to somebody. You know, it disappears from your device, shows up on your friends, and then they can return it to you. You can print a certain number of pages at a time or a certain number of times. So, you know, again, it's something that's getting better. But also, I think we found out with the you know, the music industry is that it's going to happen, and you know, you do your best to control it, but you know, accept that it's a reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Let's see. Somebody, was it you, Mike, that was talking about Ingram?
Yes.
Okay. A listener wanted to hear more about Ingram CoreSource. If you could explain a little bit more about that.
Sure. So Ingram is a you know, distribution company, and they found the need to you know, found a need for people to be able to aggregate their content and push it out to the different channels. And what they do is they take care of all the underpinnings, so we don't have to understand how Amazon wants content or how Apple wants content. I mean, we do, but we don't have to worry about the mechanics of it. We get the file loaded into CoreSource, the files, all the metadata, all the images that are associated to that, and then we just say we want to push out to all the different channels that each title is going to go out to.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a channel that they don't yet have a relationship with, they will go off on their own and establish that relationship. So we have a business relationship with the channel. They have the technology relationship and handle that on our behalf.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. I had a question here. Do you find – someone asked if you how you get customers to change to an ebook, and I'm wondering if that's really something that you're trying to do, or whether you're trying to do more follow the demand, or is it or are you actually trying to sort of actively, in some cases, move people toward ebooks because you think it'll be a better experience for them?
Yes.
Yeah,
the answer
yes
to that question. I don't think we're actively moving from one to the other.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a question right now of providing options for the customers.
Okay.
Until we start to see how content, which pieces of content, what types of content are best used at certain places. You know, Mike referenced, reference material. I think taking a 1,000-page book that has nothing but codes in it, that's a horrible book to look at either in a book or online. Are we trying to drive customers from one to the other? At this point, I still think we're looking at options. I mean, we've had options for our customers for a number of years. It started with print, we went to CDs, then we went to websites, and now we're going to ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
And that same content in our world might be available in all four of those places right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's no real active push, but it's just making sure that we have it available in whatever the customer wants.
Okay. What market challenges have you faced when preparing ebook content for an older technological generation? How do you make content more easy to use and navigate for those who are maybe not as technologically savvy? Has that been something that you've needed to address? Or
I think the only way we've addressed it is to say in some of our books to say that this content is best viewed in a large screen color format.
Okay.
But at this point, I figure and this is my personal guess, is if you know how to use the iPad or you know how to use the Kindle, the ebook side is sort of secondary to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our customers are typically either have gone to or are going through some sort of higher education, so we tend to not bump into that a bit. Now, for the people, professionals who've been working in the industry for many, many years and are excellent doctors but really don't like computers, they can still buy the print book if they want. And the best we can do for them is to maybe have an app that's easier to use than just a straight ebook, but they have all the options there and they'll just choose whichever one works best for them.
Okay. I've got a few different questions, and if you guys think you've sufficiently covered this, let me know, but I'm getting several questions about sort of structural workflow type questions, things like how do you get started implementing an XML workflow? Somebody's talking about, longtime editors confused as to what their role is in the new era. They're kicking and screaming over ebooks versus print and how to spend their time. So is there something in terms of the way that things need to be sort of reorganized in order to facilitate these new, especially when you're talking about a multi-channel workflow and things like that. Anything you can say about that?
I think we spend a lot of time letting print drive things.
Yeah.
And the challenge now is how do we start thinking about content as content and stop thinking about what the deliverable is, so that we can get through the process, so that we can get the authors and the contributors to just write. Or just provide us imagery, or whatever it is you're doing to get the book, to get the content together, and as a secondary element, we can then decide how we're going to put it out there. We spent a lot of time in the past worrying about what does this book look like before Mr. Author has written word one about it. I think it's time we sort of backtrack that and start thinking about, well, just give me content, and we're going to start figuring out how to deliver it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we had a sister company that went through a huge transformation a few years ago, going from a very print-focused workflow, documenting all their different workflows and trying to boil that down into some common workflows that they could all standardize on, and then reorganizing from a more of a siloed editorial structure into a common content group and then an editorial function that is less worried about the content structure.
Okay.
So there's sort of a duality in the, one side worries about the structure and the delivery, the other side just worries about the subject matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. There was one question about DRM. I don't know if you've settled on, sort of a standard for your company or a strategy related to DRM, whether you think that's kind of a question that's starting to become sort of resolved now or what your opinion might be on that.
I think Mike said before, DRM is handled as, in our mind, is best handled by the end seller.
Okay.
So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
There's many different ways to do it, and I think they're probably the best people at a technology standpoint to keep control over that.
Okay.
Yeah, in many cases, we can't even really dictate that. They'll say this is what you get, and that's it.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. What about quality control? One person asked whether you hire freelancers to proofread every EPUB file or whether that's done in-house.
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both?
A little
okay.
bit of both. Mm-hmm. And it sort of depends on the book. The benefit of starting with XML when we have that opportunity is that the content's pretty solid, getting it through to an EPUB. And then it just becomes down to the sensitivity for how we want it to look. It really does become a question of if it's very important how it looks, then we're going to ask more people to do more QA on it. If it's a pretty standard book with a standard process around it and a standard format to it, then we're pretty comfortable to do just a very glancing review of it.
Okay.
We have it's probably a three-stage process. So content starts life as either XML or as print. So we've already reviewed it at that point to be pretty confident about the content quality. It then goes out to a conversion vendor, and the conversion vendor will do QA on it, at least to make sure that everything structurally is intact. Now, they may not be subject matter experts, so they're not going to know if they cut and paste something weird and miss that, but we then have an outsourced QA company that goes through everything and, again, just looks for anomalies. And by the time it's gone through that, it's about as much as we can do unless we go through the entire editorial process again and proofread it. And then we just manage errata as needed.
Okay. Mike, you mentioned earlier not always knowing what's going to be around the next corner, whether somebody's going to come up with some sort of smell functionality or whatever we might want to call that. Someone asked a question, what can we do to make sure we are not surprised by future moves in technology? How can we adjust our strategy to deal with this? And I don't know if this is really also kind of more of a structural question of sort of being able to be nimble and things like that.
Well, again, it's a moving target. We 20 years ago were making CD-ROMs and everything was a custom application for a PC that was driven off the CD-ROM. And then web comes along and all of a sudden everything has to be HTML and standardized. So now we move away from the apps again and now we're back in, we're into a flowable text format. And now apps come back out and they're, the big thing. And so we're all, doing apps. And then who knows what the next big wave is going to be. I don't think you can really totally future-proof yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any Anything, Tom, to add?
No, it's a large. It's a wait and see. You know, we're keeping up as much as we can of the technology that's out there, but mm-hmm. we're not building it ourselves. So,
mm-hmm. Someone asked if a different ISBN is used for each ebook format: Kindle, iPad, Google, etc.
Yes.
Yes.
We need to be able to track sales by ISBN. So, for many reasons, we have the main print ISBN, and that becomes what we call a title group ISBN, and then there's a derivative eISBN for each of the platforms.
Okay. Okay. And since you have a very specific subject / audience. What sort of marketing do you engage in to reach these target consumers? Has that changed much, or has the marketing side not changed as much?
I think we're just shifting. In our world, we're shifting from selling to bookstores to selling to the Amazons of the world,
mm-hmm.
And going through in that direction. We're still catching up with, I think, how to market these pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And where best to market them. I think the marketing of them is going to change.
Okay.
And has started to sort of take a swing, and we're going to start taking more and more looks at those things.
So when you say catching up, you mean taking a look at where people are really getting these books and how they want to get these books?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's the same sort of challenge you face with anything. I mean, I can go out on the web, out onto the web, go to Google or wherever, and type in a search for something. You know, and if I'm buying a product and I have an idea what I want, I just type in those words and it appears and it says, you know, here's 18 places to go buy it. You know, how do we drive that first interest in buying one of our books is our challenge. You know, where do we start putting that information? And a lot of it's on our own websites. A lot of it's on sister websites, you know, that might be selling similar products on our journal sites versus other pieces. But we're still evolving in that world.
Okay. Okay.
One of the neat things that we're able to do now is e-sampling to professors. So if you know we want to get a textbook adopted by an institution, we can send an email out to a professor and say, you know, here's a pass for 90 days to check out our content. If you like it, then they, you know, hopefully will buy it. But it makes it very easy to get it out there, and you know they can read the entire content. It's not just a chunk. They can't really do a whole lot with it, but it's like leaving a copy of the print on their desk, but you don't have to mm-hmm. actually drive there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Well, I think we're just about out of time for today, so I'd like to wrap things up by saying on behalf of Book Business and SPI Global, I'd like to thank you all for attending today's webinar. And be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archives and upcoming webinars. If you would take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we would be very grateful, as your feedback will influence the webinars that we bring to you in the future. And again, thank you very much to our speakers. And thank you all for attending this webinar today. And we hope to see you all at the next Book Business webinar. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jim.